You're enjoying the meal today. We are now preparing to turn to the highlight of the event. And I'd just like to say how excited we are at the FCC to have today's guest as a speaker. It's possible that years from now, people will look back on 2010 as the year when Hong Kong began its rise as an offshore renminbi trading center. And if they do, they will probably have to name Charles Lee as one of the critical figures in that transformation process. Bankers, traders, policymakers alike are all getting increasingly excited about the idea of Hong Kong's potential as a place to develop new renminbi products, new renminbi services. And the Hong Kong Stock Exchange is extremely strategically positioned to capture some of that business as a place to trade some of these new products and services. I know Charles Lee has a lot of interesting ideas about Hong Kong, how Hong Kong can do this, and how Hong Kong can benefit from UN liberalization. And we're fortunate that he's chosen to come here to the FCC here to share some of these ideas with all of us. So before Charles comes up, can I just ask to make sure that you have your cell phones turned off? But without further ado, please welcome Charles Lee.
Thank you very much. Really, I've never been to this building. It just looks great. Also understand the composition of the organization, which is also a good education. Very happy to be here, and I wanted to keep my remarks reasonably brief so that I understand this is not a shy audience, so that we can have some back and forth going. I think we have spent a lot of time the last few months talking about internationalization of renminbi, and I wanted to find every opportunity for us to be able to communicate, because this is a historical transformation. It's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very complex. It's going to take a long time for this to work out. And I think particularly in the context of the overall global changes, particularly with the trade, the trade controversies and many of the things that we're going to see coming. So this is going to be a big topic, but this is not going to be something that it will be over, and if we make a right decision in the next few months and then a couple of years later, everything is going to get done. This is a decade-long process. So I just want to make clear. Initially, we want to present some other slides, but I think we're going to keep it very short and very focused on RMB, because that's, I was told by the organizer, this is what all of you wanted to talk about it today. I think some of you know that I wrote a piece a while ago, about a week or two ago, in Chinese directly. It's posted on our website. It was cited by a lot of people. Be aware that was written directly in Chinese, and I was told that it was okay. It reads okay. But if you don't read the Chinese, if you can only read the English, and if you go to the net and you check on that and read English, you're going to say, what's the fuss? Because this guy doesn't know how to write. And this is actually very, very convoluted. This is very detailed. I think that's largely, unfortunately, the letter was written directly in Chinese. It was meant to be differently. It was much more of overall policy, lobby, overall explanation. So I think when you write in Chinese, generally speaking, you explain. But when you write in English, you summarize. So there's a very difference. So when you do read it, a lot of the details were in there. And I wanted to just to quickly go over some of it, and so that we understand. I think we have, most of our Western audience seems to be quite skeptical about this whole process, thinking, is it going to really work, particularly in the context of a closed capital account? It has never tried before. And are we getting ahead of ourselves? Is it too much hype on here? A lot of our Chinese friends we're getting a little bit, I would say, maybe a little bit overly optimistic and a little bit overly excited, because thinking that this is going to happen tomorrow, money is going to start to flow in, and the only thing they care is how it's going to work, how detailed you're going to, which products you're going to push, which products are going to work and how they work. So I think that's slightly different. So today we have a healthy mix of different perspectives here. Let me try to be balanced so that we can, we can provide some perspective here. Essentially, you know, there's six key questions on this issue. Why China really should do it or needs to do it? Two, is it gonna work in the context of the capital account and still being closed? And three, if it does work, how is it likely gonna work out? And the fourth, vis-a-vis Hong Kong, why Hong Kong is the right place to do it? And two, what are the things that this thing is going to mean to Hong Kong? What are the opportunities going to bring to Hong Kong? And lastly, what do we need to do in order to get ready for it? So this largely are the six questions. I don't want to go through each one of them. If you want to ask questions on some of them, we can get onto it. I think it's pretty, we make a pretty sweeping conclusion. On the first question is China really needs to do it. It needs to do it for three key reasons. You know, all the accumulated wealth that you already have today, you know, your currency, as long as your currency continues to remain to be a closed currency and nobody cares to hold, you know, the preservation of the value is always going to be your key challenge, number one. Number two, if you really want to grow, if you want to get out of the current trap of difficulty that all the dilemmas that we have, getting your currency, one day becoming an international currency, is ultimately one way to seek overall balanced growth. I mean, a lot of theories behind it. I'm not an economist, I'm not a currency specialist, but I was told that's the right conclusions to make. And lastly, I think China becoming the second world largest economy, I think in order for you to be eventually to play that role, your currency needs to have its role in the workplace as a reserve currency. So that's really something let's just deal with it very quickly now. Second issue, is it actually going to work? This is the bigger issue. A lot of people are skeptical about it. I think we're going to go through some of the roadmaps here. I don't really have any magic solution or crystal ball. This is just all considered view as to how it could potentially like to evolve. And we believe that today it's actually possible, because if you go and actually say, let's have a full ban on opening the capital account, it's not going to work, because China is not, today successfully survived two financial crises. The last thing it wants to do is to open too quickly at the risk of potentially unduly affecting the continued growth of China, and also before China is ready to manage the magnificent risk that are likely going to happen when you open the capital account prematurely. So clearly this has to be in the context of the overall capital account remain largely unopened. So we're going to talk about how, we believe it's going to work, but it's going to gradual. The progress has to be controlled, the risk has to be maintained, and need to be an overall gradual and experimented basis. It's not going to open in one big go. So what's the overall likely roadmap? That's really is something that we have talked about it. I'm trying to use this chart to give an indication. Today, China's trade accounts are completely open, meaning that anybody who wanted to pay renminbi for China's export are free to do so, and anybody who wanted to buy Chinese goods with renminbi are free to do so. And there are large scale swap arrangements made with the central banks of many of China's trading partners, and the swaps will be able to provide the renminbi liquidity for the trade. So as you can see, the two big pipe on top and that very bottom, the very thick pipe, those pipes are completely open. Renminbi can flow out freely and renminbi can flow back in freely without any real restrictions. That's pretty much open today. But the real challenge, the problem is there's no water in that pipe. And because there's no renminbi out there to pay for it, and even though the swap could provide the renminbi with the people who want to pay with renminbi, the people, the trade partner, have no incentive to do so because they really, really don't have any use or even place to park the renminbi. So therefore, we actually have, this is a great challenge, but this is actually the biggest opportunity. But because of the existence of this opportunity, that the trades channel are completely free, that allow us to have a healthy conversation with policymakers in China, that this is the time for us to do something about it, that you have open two channels, that there are no water in there, and we need to make sure that water start to flow, and naturally. But at the beginning, we have to do it artificially. Hopefully, when you reach critical mass, that will flow, that will eventually begin to flow. So what happened over the last 5 years is that if you look at the dark blue, the formation phase, that essentially is what we are today. Over the last 5 years, the little money started to flow out of China, the 20K thousand day deposit started to flow. That's the beginning of legalized renminbi outflow from China into Hong Kong. And for many years, they stayed there. And there were a lot of restrictions as to how the renminbi can move. You know, we are now saying that, you know, the water in there is stale and there are no fish in there because no fish, you know, the water is not flowing. So this settlement agreement, which was signed back in July, fundamentally is a breakthrough because now renminbi not only can flow out, renminbi can flow freely in outside China, and now they can also flow back to China because China finally opened the interbank bond market to foreign institutions who have renminbi, who would like to take renminbi in. So now the three steps finally create the dark pool, which is already a sufficient, you know, a pool for us to begin the experiment. Right now it's 100 billion renminbi and is rising very, very fast. I think the key challenge here, so most of the products here are still banking product, deposit CDs, and you know, we start to see insurance products, we start to see some fund management products. The key to make this work at this point is to make sure the money is able to flow back, because the yield that those products outside China required for the investors need to come from China, because there are no yield outside China. So the flow is critical, that the money flows out to provide the liquidity, provide the water, but the fish need the yield inside the water to survive and grow, and that yield has to come from China because there's no renminbi product out there. So our first achievement today is really the first pool is finally established. But that pool today, as we talked about it, is broadly speaking fixed income, broadly speaking banking product, broadly speaking lower yield. And I think it's a great starting point. Many of our trading partners will begin to put renminbi, potentially consider putting renminbi into it, and begin to consider the treasuries, the CFOs of many of our trading partners will begin to notice this and will begin to think about over time they may want it to begin to redenominate some of their balance sheet into renminbi if they wanted to, if they are China's long-term major trading partners. But we're saying this is not enough. And this is what we are today. We believe that we need to begin to move into a higher yield curve. Why do we need to do that? Because we need to do that in order to make sure that larger product, greater number of products, and higher yielding products, which means it's going to trade more actively products, begin to emerge. Because only when those products start to emerge in the middle pool, then you start to not only have a much larger pool, but much more leveraged pool. What do we mean by that? If any renminbi flowing out today in the banking product, in the insurance product, they are typically held until maturity. We wanted to make sure that ultimately for this thing to work, the product need to trade. If every dollar of product coming out of China is able to trade 6, 7, 8, 9 times during its lifetime, that essentially means $7 of renminbi already came out. So the leverage factor is huge. We need to start moving to those product areas. Not only we can have larger products, because we have a lot more issuers who may potentially consider this. We have a lot more trading activities. So therefore, if we are able to move ourselves into the second pool, as you can see the yellow circle, the trading is likely going to happen big time, and it's going to be a lot more. The leverage factor is going to be a lot more. So therefore, our next stage, continue to grow the first pool, and then begin to really focus growing and potentially exponentially grow our second pool. So there are two key challenges. I think investors would love to buy products in the corporate bonds, in the in interest rate products, eventually stocks, index futures, for example. Investors would love to buy them. But the two challenges, any issuer is going to ask, at this, am I better? Is this, what's the downside for me? What's the upside for me? What, you know, is there any reason for me to do this? Because I'm doing Hong Kong dollar product. I'm fine. I'm doing IPO here. I have listed here. I add on products here. Why do I need to do renminbi? What's my upside? What's my downside? I think the upside is going to be limited, but it's an important upside. That is, if you are a company that have important business in China, and if you are able to list, for example, issue equity here or issue bond here or issue, one thing you care is to bring that money back into China in order to bring that yield back. But today, if you raise Hong Kong dollar financing in Hong Kong, when you move the money back, you have to go through an extremely difficult and complex and restricted FDI regime, because this is China's foreign exchange control. The safe organization of SAFE is entirely in charge with controlling the flow back of US dollar. With China already have $2.6 trillion in reserves, it's very difficult to bring money back in. So you have to go through a lot of elaborate process. So if we are able to demonstrate, if we're able to lobby, if we're able to succeed and secure a much relaxed regime of controlling FDI going back into China, we potentially offer the issuer upside. The issuer would say, if I raise a Hong Kong dollar here, it's going to go through hell for me to bring the money back. But if I raise Hong Kong dollar in RMB, it's easier. That's upside. Okay. Again, that's not a compelling upside. That's not going to drive everybody to start to do RMB. But that's an important incremental element for people to think, okay, maybe I will consider this product. Because a lot of people also consider the novelty, the creativity, value of it. But the tangible value is that hopefully we're able to negotiate and lobby for a better FDI regime of money flowing back to China. The second question, the guy is going to say, do I have any downside? Obviously, the first quick downside everybody's going to see is that my demand for my securities going to be affected by the availability, the limited availability of renminbi. Because right now, there are only 100 billion renminbi. Some of our IPOs, for example, generate over subscriptions over 200, 300 billion Hong Kong dollars. So clearly, even if all the renminbi out of China are willing to participate in any transactions, that's still limited. So the issuer would have every reason to say that I don't want to consider this product unless I know that I'm not going to suffer a valuation discount simply because there are not enough renminbi out there. So in the interim, we have lobbied for, but we could also provide what we call the liquidity support pool that potentially can take an issuer's problem out of it. And how that works is a little bit technical, but essentially is that you have a pool. The people who have renminbi can continue trading that product. People who don't have renminbi but who love the product for arbitrage reasons or other reasons can go into the pool, participate in the deal, therefore minimizing, if not eliminating, all the price discrepancies due to the availability of renminbi. But when they sell, if you bought with Hong Kong dollars, you sell and then you take renminbi, you sell your stock, but you take your Hong Kong dollar back out of the pool, so the renminbi level inside the pool integrity get preserved. So that's the idea. So we believe it could work. Obviously, the larger the support pool, the larger number of issues that you can do, but we can start. We can start with individual transactions or small number of transactions. We are able to provide that, with the existing liquidities. I'm sure the banks are able to provide that. So we do believe that this middle pool is something that is highly feasible and highly workable, And the reason this policymakers in China potentially will potentially favorably consider this is because all the things we are doing here, even though require some limited opening of the capital account, even on this capital pool is only for limited purposes and for a shorter period of time at the beginning when enough renminbi start to accumulate naturally, then it will actually, you know, this will eventually, the need will, you know, be phased out. But what the point of all of this is for China's trading partners one day finally realize there is enough products in Hong Kong, there is enough yield in the banking system, the banks have enough yield doing all this, making enough money, are able to provide attractive returns for deposit product, trade financing products, another product for our trading partners. For many of the trading partners, one day, hopefully over time, we'll find out that they need to start to denominate certain of their balance sheet into renminbi, and what before they can use it, they have interim parking space, interim yielding place, interim investment place. So we believe this is for purposes. So the reason the policymakers could potentially agree to it is because all of this is for purposes of creating the need for the trading partners to begin to consider using renminbi so that the big pipe at the very top and the big pipe at the very bottom start to flow. When they start to flow, then hopefully that will be massive, because right now there are $2.5 trillion worth of trade. Only a percentage of that is redenominated into renminbi. We are seeing a very substantial market and, you know, offshore renminbi flow. And by that time, a portion of the renminbi will hopefully become permanently stationed here and creating an indigent and native grown market that will also begin to have the yield, so that not all the flows of the renminbi coming out has to flow back. So over time, hopefully only the money that need to flow out of China have to be through the trade accounts, and then the money that flow back into China again is through the trade account with the two big pipe. We hope that this ultimate exercise may one day actually work. So that's really is the broader idea. And I think Hong Kong, why Hong Kong? Yeah, it's very simple. It's one country, two system, and there's already IFC. One country, China trusted. China wouldn't trust anything else, for example. And it's two systems, because it has to be offshore, has to be a real market to try and test this. And it's an IFC already, and we already have everything that it needs to do this. Then this is obviously gonna bring a lot of things to Hong Kong over time. Right now, at the beginning, phase one, is more of a redenomination of some of the Hong Kong existing Hong Kong dollar assets into renminbi. I think right now, you know, hopefully, you know, if all the circling that I was talking about is able to achieve, we will be attracting regional and global trade flows into Hong Kong renminbi market. And ultimately, the holy grail is that one day Chinese investors will begin to come here en masse. Because the QDIIs to start with, they can come here today with US dollars, but the moment they leave China, they suffer 5% or 4% or whatever is the appreciation that they're gonna cost them. So if they're able to start with renminbi, then obviously this is a huge, great product. They also provide greater liquidity for us offshore. But over time, I think, you know, ultimately, we will be deemed to be broadly similar as a greater China market. And it's only a matter of time that Chinese investors will ultimately come down here. So the opportunity is huge, but this requires a lot of efforts, you know, for us to work with authorities up there, authorities here, market players here. Some authorities need to do more, other authorities need to do less, and we need to find out a way to make this work. So we need to lobby for policy change. In the Hong Kong X today, we're lobbying for policy change together with our own government, HKMA. They're doing the bulk of the lifting. You know, we're very thankful that our government are what I call quiet heroes. You know, I'm talking about it, but they're doing it. So, you know, and so, but obviously as government official, they cannot talk too much. So, you know, but they are lifting, you know, they are really doing the heavy lifting. They are lobbying for policy change. We are now setting up renminbi infrastructure. We want to expand our mainland market data business. We want to develop renminbi products. We want to facilitate mainland connectivity. And ultimately, we pursue our OTC clearing, which ultimately, when renminbi becomes sufficient, critical mass offshore China, there will be huge amount of interest rate swaps, activities, hedging, risk management opportunities. We want to make sure that we're there. So this is a very exciting potential transformation, lots of work. It's going to be very easily set, easier said than done, but I do think we have a very, very bright future ahead of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. And we're going to go to all of you for questions in a minute. So please think of any questions for Charles. You just covered a lot of ground there, so there's clearly a lot of room to dig into some of the material you covered. I'm going to start with Jake, who I know would like to ask you something.
The privilege of sitting at the head table. Charles, you talk about the heavy lifting being done by the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, by the Hong Kong government. And you also speak of the authorities in Beijing of in terms of they really ought to realize, they should recognize, and so forth. How much lobbying have you actually done of the people in Beijing? Because in the end, it is the renminbi we're talking about. The heavy lifting will have to be done there in terms of permissions for all of this. What is the response you're getting?
They're very, very responsive.
But dates, amounts, specifics, anything?
I think it's sufficient for me to say that I'm very impressed with the vision. I'm very impressed with the, what do you expect me to say? I'm very, very happy with the result. And I think there's absolute determination to make it work because this is good for all of us.
You give a very precise figure, 100 billion renminbi in the Hong Kong system.
Today.
This is today. What's your target and what would they, what do you think their target is? Will they allow 300 next year, 500? How would they raise it?
They don't, I mean, as long as everything today, as I said, if it's all going through the trade settlement channel, they don't care as much as people want it to do. So that's really the opportunity because if they don't even want that, it becoming very, very, it's a futile exercise. We, you know, it's not even worth the time. The reason is that they wanted the renminbi trade settlement account to flow, to work. And as much as it need to be, naturally the market can bear for then the China trade to be redenominated into US, into renminbi, they don't have an issue. The issue is, can we do that without having to do anything? Just let them flow. I think everybody realized it will flow. Over time, there will be from trickles and eventually become more, you know, more and more. But the argument now is that we don't have the time to wait for this to naturally to form. We're creating some artificial boosting in order to get the flow going because once they reach natural, you know, critical mass, it will begin to flow on its own. So we're really talking about doing this interim support to make it work.
Charles, can I ask you, you know, talking to a lot of people in the banks, many of them are very excited about what's going on, but they also caution that unless they have greater access to the mainland share markets to deposit the renminbi that they're accumulating, it's going to be very hard to get people excited. I mean, you talked about this, the need to create a yield curve, the need to create investment products that are going to actually motivate people to keep their money in renminbi. So the question is, what are the next steps to allow that to happen? What's in the pipeline? I know you have this mini QFI program that's in the works. Can you explain that a little bit more and how that's going to get us from A to B?
Well, the mini QFI is only one way of bringing money into China and seeking the yield that is necessary. But it's a limited experiment. It's only 20 billion renminbi. And it's initially going to start. I don't think that's a very helpful exercise, but I don't really think that necessarily need to be the only way. In fact, the larger way, the better way, the less controversial way of bringing money back into China is through FDI. You know, it's basically the chart, because many of the products that we are going to issue that ultimately could make this you know, work better is actually in equity, or, you know, many of this product, actually the money the flow back, people always think about flowing back into the Asia market in order to get the yield there. I think that's one of them, but that's not the main. The bulk is actually, hopefully, is FDI. It's much easier and much larger and a much higher yield for many of the product for the FDI to come in. When I talk about money flowing from FDI, I'm not talking about all the renminbi flowing back. I'm talking about, let's say I'm an issuer. I did an IPO in China, and I raised $500 million. I'm talking about that $500 million need to flow back. In order for us to get the yield of that $500 million IPO equity, the dividend, or the anticipated earning contributions that moved the share prices and to make the trading happen. So I think people sometimes are overly focused on bringing money into the capital account. And I actually think that's not something that we should be, you know, focusing on. And in fact, focusing on FDI is less controversial. It's you know, it's even less impact on the capital account. So, you know, I don't think we're talking about using this RMB thing to build a connectivity with the capital market as a way of doing it. And it could eventually, then the connectivity of the two capital market will ultimately, you know, develop. But this is not what we are trying to do. This is certainly not the means of achieving it.
Okay, I'd like to open this up to the floor. Please identify yourself before asking your question.
Hi, I'm Peter Crowell, a freelance writer, and I've been writing about RMB for the last 3 or 4 months, and the pace of change has been amazing, and much of what I wrote 3 or 4 months ago is now ancient history and absolutely not news. What's interesting for me is whether the genie is out of the bottle. I think probably one of the best things I've read in the last couple of weeks was a piece of analysis by Standard Chartered, which talked about the, see if I can get this acronym right, the CYH, Chinese Yuan in Hong Kong, which creates unavoidable parallels with the Euro dollar, which seems to be, you know, deeply at odds with the People's Bank of China's wish for a cautious and gradual of the RMB. So which way is it going to go?
Yeah, I think what we're talking about today is highly consistent with what China's stated policy of keeping a gradual, managed, and incremental step. Because as we are talking about here, we're not advocating any wholesale structure change to how the capital account is being maintained. We're able to do this is because today RMB trade settlement is open. That's really the key. Whatever we're doing in the middle here is trying to find a way to stimulate the natural growth of the trade account to actually have market to demand it, have the actual flow of RMB in and out. So that's really is the essence of this. And if we think, you know, as I said earlier, if today the trade settlement is not even open, we're not having this conversation. This excitement is completely ill-founded, is unfounded. But today we are not either talking about somehow massively open the capital account. Even on the capital support pool, for example, liquidity support pool that I was talking about, is going to be a very limited basis. You know, as you can see, and we're not talking about, for example, some people were worried about, if I do IPO, I generate an oversubscription of $200 billion generally. Where do I get $200 billion oversubscribed? So which means that we don't have all these people with RMB screaming, lining up to subscribe. What we are saying is, you don't need the RMB to subscribe it, because everybody can line up just like any other Hong Kong IPO with Hong Kong dollars. You just line up, put into the brokers, make it work, and still have 200 times over the subscription, whatever it is. So you will never suffer the RMB inadequacy. But only when the time comes when the share is allocated to you, then the people who got the shares, then we're going to say, do you have RMB? If you have RMB, go ahead and trade like everybody else. If you don't have RMB, okay, great, trade through this pool. When you trade through this pool, so therefore, if the transaction is, let's say, $1 billion, There's only $1 billion RMB you need to have on day one, assuming that nobody with RMB wants to subscribe. So all what we are talking about here is to use the existing liquidity and hopefully using certain creative structures to really make this thing flow so fast that this pressure bring the two big pipes to work. So this is not necessarily something that the government is worried. They understand it. Therefore, they're not worrying. They're supporting it because this is not opening the capital account.
Other questions, gentlemen here?
I'm Tohan Shi from the South China Morning Post. What do you say to this notion? I'm not saying it's true, but what do you say to this notion that the Chinese government wants to make Shanghai the top Chinese financial center, so you are put in Hong Kong to give Hong Kong an alternate direction as a financial center?
Since you already said they're not saying that, so why comment on something they didn't say?
Next question. Other questions?
So what is Robin Fox? What is there to stop them doing this in Shanghai and not in Hong Kong, since there are vested interests that would much rather see an operation like this in China and not in somewhere like Hong Kong?
Well, going back to the chart again, the whole purpose is to make trade settlement work. Now, who are the trade settlement? They're all foreign companies. They're all foreign partners. They all, they are able to open bank accounts here. They are able to, if they already don't have it here. We are already international market. Over time, I'm sure Shanghai will want to experiment this and do this, but so is Tianjin, so is Shenzhen, so is Guangzhou. Everybody wants to have a piece of action, so we should have everybody to have a piece of action. But we go back to this chart, we're going to ask who has this. We're the only one, so question answered.
Keith Bradshaw, New York Times. To what extent do you see this process discriminating against global investors? Within Hong Kong itself, traditionally there's been no discrimination between Hong Kong investors and global investors. On the other hand, for some of the RMB transactions, whether it's individuals, have to be Hong Kong residents to put in 20,000 a day, as opposed to somebody getting off the plane from another country. You talked about your wanting to see global investors using Hong Kong as a vehicle for being able to do transactions in RMB. But do you find from the authorities that maybe they would prefer first to maybe ring fence Hong Kong or SEPA adherent businesses and individuals before allowing opening this up to global investors?
I think that the only thing they did is that they decide what to do over there. As soon as the money gets out, they don't really care. So I don't think they're making a distinction or differentiation or discrimination against anybody who wants to be playing over here. But obviously, at the beginning, the money flowing out is a controlled flow, which is the 20,000 right now is only Hong Kong residents. I don't know whether it's only Hong Kong residents. If you're foreign, if you're a foreign citizen having a Hong Kong account, I don't think you will be discriminated against at all. But ultimately, right now, this is not an institutional market yet. The reason the second pool is very important is because it will become an institutional market. And in the institutional market, they can initially play with limited amount of RMB. They can still play, as we talked about the liquidity support pool. But once more and more trade settlements started coming, more and more RMB naturally flow out of China, not through the capital account, but through the current account, and be able to flow back, there will be more and more RMB naturally deposited in here. I'm sure the bank will have more and more RMB, and I'm sure the banks will more and more deal with global investors. And in fact, the support pool, let's say we do an IPO tomorrow, we have a support pool. The support pool will be completely colorblind, race blind, country blind.
Okay, sorry. First of all, I wanted to congratulate you for being a University of Alabama graduate. My father and both brothers went to Bama.
Great.
I'm sure you followed the football, the current football season. I have a simple question, perhaps a catch-up question, but are you talking about a new class of shares in Hong Kong, something like a C share, a RMB-denominated set of companies that can do IPOs in RMB? I think that's, again, it may be a catch-up question, but I wish you would clarify.
Yeah, if we do a product like that, it will be, I don't know whether you have to call a name for it. Ultimately, we will have a name for it, but it will not be the same as your Hong Kong shares, for example. If it's an IPO, if it's a share, it could potentially be, we haven't got a name for it, but yes, it will be a separate class. Oh yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, it's the same security issue by the same company with the same rights and terms and conditions and everything else, but it's just the one it trades. This tranche is trading in RMB, where you have other tranches, and the other, your underlying stock is continue to trade in Hong Kong dollar. That will be fine. And the only difference between the two should be the currency difference. Shouldn't really have any valuation difference if the liquidity pool works.
Charles, when do you think we could see a tranche like that begin trading in Hong Kong?
I hope next year.
Which quarter?
Earlier the better. Yeah. Awesome. We'll try. We want to do it. We know everybody wants to do it. But even if we do it, it's interesting. It's a good story for the journalist. But this is a very, very small step of a very long march. So we need to have the patience and to really slug it out.
I think we've got time for maybe one or two more questions.
Over there.
Kate O'Keefe.
Hi, this is Kate. I'm with Dow Jones. Charles, you mentioned that, well, I guess you've said in the past that both Hong Kong and China are on board with this. Everyone's supportive. I guess what I'm wondering then is why it seems you have to do so much work to lobby for change. I mean, if everyone wants this to happen, who's sort of against it and what kind of objections are they raising? You know, why is the process taking maybe longer than it seems you'd like?
Yeah.
And secondly, I guess you've mentioned before that you think this could be, you know, multi-trillion dollar market. But how much of that would actually be profit for organizations like the Hong Kong Exchange or banks who are actually handling these settlements? Or, you know, what's the actual profitability that would be generated by Hong Kong taking part in what seems like quite a laborious exercise?
Yes.
Thanks.
I think on the first question, I wouldn't want to overuse the word lobby, suggesting that they are sitting there and we are the one who have the smart ideas and coming and tell them what they should be doing. This is all as much self-generated, if not more self-generated up there than is over-generated here. Simply because, you know, we all know China is on its march towards modernization, and it's going to do what it's going to do, is going to do what it thinks is the right thing to do, and this just happened to be the time for that, for us to do that, and that is deemed to be the correct thing to do. And we happen to be around, and we happen to be, you know, I don't think, you know, anybody should be taking credit that we are the one who created this. We are the one who are obviously trying to offer our expertise, offer our market knowledge, offer our sense and judgment about investor behavior, what product works, how it will work. So those are the things that, you know, we're helping, but this is clearly, a policy direction that is very consistent with what is going on that we are seeing on the broader China environment. I think in terms of the actual beneficiary of this, I mean, this is the magnitude of this beneficiary and the benefit is just multidimensional. And I think obviously right now the banks at the first stage, it's a redenomination of assets. So you could argue that really from an asset incremental assets increase growth basis, probably not that much. It's more switching your Hong Kong dollar into RMB. So the beneficiary of the banks, insurance companies, and some of the fee incomes. But whatever benefit we're seeing today are very, very limited. But once you move on to the second and third stage, we're talking about essentially making us one of the most critical international market of China. That just, all the histories, that all the, you know, things that we were talking about, us being more marginalized, you know, we no longer even have to worry about it. So I think the magnitude of the benefit is just substantial and can never be underestimated. No, can never be overestimate it. Yeah. Sorry.
Thanks, Charles. I think we have time for maybe one more question here.
I think there's a hand there.
Tara.
Thanks. I'd like to ask about yuan derivatives contracts. Are you seeing a lot of interest in that already as a sign of how much interest there are in players for this, and when might you launch such a contract?
I think it's still limited because then the capital account is not open, so therefore most of the contracts are non-deliverable contracts, so they're still, you know, a reasonably small size. But ultimately, when a healthy, vibrant, reliable international offshore RMB market began to emerge and began to offering a reliable and a reference point for the exchange rate, creating hopefully a more favorable external environment for the RMB rate to be gradually, you know, connected with the global, global world, then that's the time, you know, ultimately derivative will become extraordinarily important. And one of the reasons we are building an OTC clearing infrastructure is precisely to make sure that if that does eventually become the trend and become a very major development, Hong Kong X is right there to handle it.
Is that a decade away then in your big picture before we see the derivatives contracts? Is it at the end of the game or would it be before?
Well, if I gave you a number, that means that I believe in myself. I don't think anything I tell you is going to be worth anything because it's just going to be my educated guess as anybody else's educated guess. But we are talking, and we're not talking about 3 years, probably not five, you know, and then the next one is 10 years, right? Yeah, probably you're right, you know. But we will begin to see a healthy, you know, start, you know, to emerge probably in 5 years.
Well, thank you, Charles. I think we could probably keep on going for some time longer, but we do have a time limit on these events. But we appreciate your taking the time to meet with us and revisit your journalistic roots. Am I right that you actually were a journalist for 2 years, studied journalism at the University of Alabama? So although you cannot apply for an FCC membership as a journalist member, we will welcome your application as an associate member. Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have a gift.
Thank you.